the reality is that Lightning is private and extremely capital efficient, and Lightning is not dead. If people say, show me the data, well, there's nothing to show because it's private. Lightning is extremely capital efficient. That means the entire Lightning capacity, 500 million worth of Bitcoin, that is cycling through the Lightning network twice every month.
Jesse Schrader is the co-founder of Amboss, one of the key companies building the next generation of Bitcoin and Lightning infrastructure.
He's focused on turning Lightning into a real-world engine for payments, liquidity, stablecoins, yield, and AI-driven commerce.
Really, Lightning is the best technology for AI agents because it does micropayments so well. What's to our benefit is that the AI agents are logical, and Bitcoin wins purely on a logical standpoint.
Hey guys, I hope you've been enjoying the episodes I've been putting out as much as I do. For me, it's been a great journey with less noise, more signal, talking to all these experts all the time. With each and every episode, I feel like I have new points to ruminate on, things to ponder over. And yeah, I've just been learning so much. So if it's the same for you, I'd appreciate you subscribing to the show on YouTube, also commenting with the episodes when you have something to say, like it and share with your friends and families and colleagues. That would be much appreciated. And that way we could reach more people with this great content and grow together. So thanks a lot for doing this. Much appreciated. And yeah, let's go. Hey guys, welcome back to Less Noise, More Signal. Today we have another very interesting guest on the show. It's Jesse Schrader. Jesse, it's cool to have you on.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm glad we were able to finally do this.
Yes, you said it. Finally. I mean, we've been trying to schedule an episode for ages, I guess. But yeah, it goes to show that probably both of us are quite busy, and which is sort of a good sign. But finally we caught up and we got it working. So it's cool to have you here. I don't know, maybe you can quickly introduce yourself. I guess not all the people from the audience might be familiar with you, your background, what you do in Bitcoin. So yeah, would be great to hear about that.
Sure. Yeah. Let's see. So I'm Jesse Schrader. I teamed up with and really started diving into Lightning quite early. So Lightning was a thing that really was like our best hope at solving Bitcoin payments problems. So like in 2017, when I got into Bitcoin, it was really about just trying to make a payment. You've got this exciting new tech, but there's a lot of pain points when it comes to actually paying Bitcoin someplace. And it was high fees. It takes a long time. And so really, we're at the start of creating the Lightning Network as we know it today. And part of that journey was using ThunderHub, which was one of the first open source node managers out there where you could click buttons instead of using the command line interface. And I teamed up with the creator of ThunderHub to start Amboss, which was really our way to organize the Lightning Network. We started with a Lightning Network Explorer, and then we've kind of gone deep into solving many of the problems that emerged in Lightning, which was liquidity, some of the data analytics and intelligence, some of the compliance issues, as well as creating yield products now, which has ended up being perfect timing for all the interest from Bitcoin treasury companies.
What is it that fascinated you so much about Lightning in the early days? Like specifically when you look at it from a technological vantage point, I guess that's sort of your background as well. And so, what is it that fascinated you when you also compare it to like all these other options out there, like other blockchains and stuff where you can already do sort of fast and secure or fast and cheap payments? But then, what is it that fascinated you?
In part of my Bitcoin journey, I did read some of Parker Lewis's writing that it was like all money converges to one. And that combined with Andreas Antonopoulos saying that Bitcoin is the next Bitcoin. That helped me focus. Those two works helped me focus just on Bitcoin. How do I make Bitcoin better? If I want this to be the money, I want this to be the foundation. I don't want it to be subject to change, which other blockchains are subject to that risk. So in order to scale it, I have to use Bitcoin scaling methods, and that is Lightning. Additionally, when it comes to speed, Lightning is instant. It truly is an exchange of just digital signatures to say this payment happened, and you don't have to update the global state. So it means you don't have to wait for blockchain confirmations. It's just you and me talking and making a transaction happen. And then we'll settle up to the blockchain later.
And I think that's a very nuanced difference that one has to kind of understand and then also appreciate. Because like when you have other scaling solutions on other blockchains, it's usually just a smaller blockchain on top of another blockchain, you know? And so you still have this sort of global consensus layer, you know, even though it might not be as base layer stuff, it's still global consensus in that sense. And I guess with Lightning, what you just described is this theoretical word, local consensus, you know, or like where we're, yeah, you exchange signatures. And is that something that fascinates you about this technology as well? And maybe you could kind of, yeah, tell the audience what I just said. Maybe you can summarize in better words.
I really like the way you framed it, because it still maintains base layer consensus. But within that consensus framework, we're able to kind of create new constructs, which are just contracts between two people. So a Lightning channel, which is like kind of the base unit, that really is just a relationship between two people. We've got a certain amount of Bitcoin in there. And then we're just negotiating about who gets paid out what from the channel. That's kind of that fundamental unit. But Lightning is extremely capital efficient. So you're kind of plugging in these channels to each other. So payments can make multiple hops and can involve many people and overall make a very efficient payment system.
Yeah, these are some great points. I guess we're getting to this later in the episode when we talk about scalability, because I think that's one of the advantages Lightning has over other blockchains. Usually people feel like, okay, now these other blockchains are already scalable enough, but maybe if we really get to like this point of adoption to where we want to get global mass adoption, then it might not be the case. Or if we even talk about like agents and these kind of actors out there, it might not be sufficient, you know, to have these other blockchains. But maybe first, I'd like to tackle some of the critical sort of statements that people have made about the Lightning Network, you know. So many critics have been saying, sort of with a rhetorical question, asking this rhetorical question, is Lightning dead? Meaning, okay, it kind of is, you know, because of the traction it has gotten. And then some people point to, for example, Bitcoin on Ethereum. UBTC alone has like 120,000 BTC on it right now. That's what I checked. And so, yeah, like, what is your assessment? Is Lightning dead?
I get that question all the time as well. But the reality is that Lightning is private and extremely capital efficient, and Lightning is not dead. When comparing it to total value locked is really about loans. So it does require quite a bit of Bitcoin in order to do that when you've got credit and debt systems. But for a payment system, you really don't need that much capital. The River report, which recently came out, was extremely informative. So that told us that approximately $15 billion is flowing through the Lightning Network every year. That means the entire Lightning capacity, you know, $500 million worth of Bitcoin, that is cycling through the Lightning Network twice every month. So that's a great indicator. So that means, you know, the velocity is, what, 24? So that is like an incredible point in Lightning's favor. The other thing is people don't see the data coming out of the Lightning Network because the transactions are private, which means if people say, show me the data, well, there's nothing to show because it's private. And that is yet again another point in Lightning's favor.
Hey guys, I'm thrilled to share my new book, The Bitcoin Enlightenment, co-authored with Mexican billionaire Ricardo Salinas. Make sure you grab your copy now and learn about how one of the richest people in all of Latin America thinks about Bitcoin. You'll find the link in the show notes. Yeah, this is such a great point the one that you just made, you know, because it reminds me of this sort of argument that Caitlin Long made a while ago in one of her papers, you know, where she was saying, okay, look, we have the old traditional system and this is based on debt and leverage. And because you can't really do instant payments in the traditional system, we have to lever up, you know, we have to create all these debt system, even in the payment system, to get things to work. But then if we had something which is like real time and settles in real time and is real fast and cheap, you know, then you wouldn't even need this amount of leverage, because exactly as you said it as well, there's a lot higher like velocity of money, you know, and then you can use the same amount of money, but just many, many times over, you know, and that's such a great point. And I guess really proves her point. It's like referencing this paper from 2017-ish or something, you know, where she was actually already saying this. And this is, I guess, only when Lightning just became a thing or was sort of presented, I guess, to the broader audience. So it's such a great point, and we're seeing this play out with Lightning in real time. So very, very interesting. And this capital efficiency argument that you're making, it would that mean that we now have this 5,000 BTC on the network, more give or take? Do you think this doesn't even have to kind of quadruple or go really that much higher? Or yeah, what is your view there?
I think right now the capital that's in there, I look at the average channel size, and the average channel size is growing larger, which means that Lightning is capable of doing larger and larger payments. When Lightning first started, it was only serving micropayments. But if you want to get to enterprise scale, at that point, we'd like to see Lightning capacity grow. But for everyday payments, like your rent, making a hotel reservation, Lightning is already capable of doing that. Out of the River report, we saw that the average payment size is now over $200, which is a great signal. That tells you that people are using Lightning for commerce. And overall, we don't need the additional capacity. We are deploying more because we want to get to that stage where we get enterprise scale payments that are happening instantly without increasing the money supply.
Very interesting. Now, like, given this volume has grown, you know, I have this line here as well from the report that the Lightning Network has surpassed 1 billion in monthly volume, you know, and this adds up with the numbers that you were referencing. So like, who is actually using the Lightning Network then, if we have this volume? Like, who are the players?
Well, because it's private, you don't totally know. I know River put some work into gathering the data from the private companies, and they're getting a sampling of like who is using the Lightning Network. And we know a lot of it comes from exchanges. If you want to do rapid fire arbitrage between exchanges, Lightning is a great way to move between them. Additionally, Square has made some very significant moves simply by enabling Lightning payments for all of their retailers, which means that Lightning has a penetration of 28% of all retailers, at least in the US, that are capable of doing Lightning payments, which is huge. We've also got Cash App, you know, and there are many millions of users that are doing withdrawals.
Exactly. I was going to ask, like, with these exchanges, River and Cash App that you were referencing, you can actually withdraw your Bitcoin using Lightning. That's what I understood, right?
Yeah. I think users like it because you don't have to wait for any confirmations. There's usually lower fees, and you can get paid instantly and more privately.
But I haven't checked recently if like Kraken or Coinbase are already enabling this as well. Because as you said, I'm as a customer would love to kind of have these faster settlement times and then also probably pay cheaper fees. Would you know, are they on it? Because I know they have Lightning integrations as well, and they announced it already a while back. Can you do it through Coinbase or Kraken to kind of withdraw with Lightning already?
Yeah, I've used Coinbase Lightning integration myself. I've used Kraken. I think most of the major exchanges have it already enabled. I think Bitfinex was early, but we've got Binance, which is huge for all the activity that's outside the US.
Yeah, that's amazing. Maybe such as something, maybe I haven't used these exchanges in a while, but just because that's why I don't know. Maybe some of my listeners are making this one and saying, okay, dude, where have you been living, you know, under a rock? But yeah, it's interesting to hear, because I think that will kind of boost adoption as well. Like, if we kind of wear this self-critical hat for a moment, you know, because I remember from what I was told way back in the days, like there were some big hurdles with the Lightning Network in terms of like liquidity management, channel management. You have this always online requirement as a user when you receive payments. There's also sometimes, you know, you have to have this inbound liquidity. Have all these things sort of been solved or like where are we when it comes to these sort of challenges?
At this point, the tools exist. So we've spent a lot of our work at Amboss actually creating the inbound liquidity. So we created a liquidity marketplace. So whenever you need inbound liquidity, you just go buy it. So our Magma marketplace does that, which means that you're buying from other nodes on the network. It's a fully open market. So anybody can create a listing and you can get paid to open a Lightning channel to someone else and solve their inbound liquidity issues. So that ends up translating into the yield. So operationally, we've built the tools already. Now with a lot of the AI tools, you can script them. So you can always maintain a certain amount of inbound liquidity, which means that your business can get paid. When it comes to running a server and keeping that always online, it is an overhead, but Lightning is the best way to scale the transactions, not necessarily the number of users. So if you're going to do a large consumer application, each one of those consumers is probably not going to run a node, and that's fine. But the businesses that are doing high volumes and don't want to be paying high transaction fees or payment processing fees to the major payment processors, well, they're going to want to use Lightning because it saves them on fees and prevents chargebacks.
Yes, yeah. What other businesses apart from exchanges are using Lightning? Because like when it comes to exchanging, I would assume a lot of what they're doing is really, as you said, it's high frequency trading, it's arbitrage, it's got to do with the Bitcoin price in some shape or form, you know, because people are speculating on Bitcoin, you know, let's put it this way. But then are you seeing any other use cases that are like moving on to Lightning and for the lack of a better term, let's call it real use cases. You know, that's what the sustainable ones everyone is looking for, you know, like what is moving on to Lightning?
We recently had a surprise, which is the iGaming industry really needs and wants Lightning. The iGaming industry is one of the underserved industries out there. And it essentially means, you know, like online gaming, slot machines, poker, any of those pieces. Well, they have to operate in regulatory gray zones. So overall, those folks will often have trouble getting an account with Stripe or getting a bank account, but Bitcoin is there to serve them. And we're seeing the volumes now come out of the iGaming folks. And it's we've been really blown away by the volumes that they're doing. That has incredible need. That is a $100 billion industry. That industry loses about 15% of its revenue to chargeback fees. So Lightning solves that in a massive way. So we're happy to be able to serve that industry and give them basic payments services that traditional banking and traditional payment processors won't do.
Yeah, I mean, I totally see that point. I mean, there's probably these, as you said, these gray area industries that are underserved, and that's why Lightning can really play a great role here. Maybe if I entertain my diavolus advocatus diaboli, you know, for a second, I can already hear some critics say, well, again, these are gaming, you know, it's related to speculation as well and gambling. Is there even something else which is not from that kind of sector, you know? So yeah, is there anything you can point to, you know, maybe shut the critic's mouth who's really just after seeing a use case he might consider a real use case, even though I know everything's subjective, you know?
It's a good point because we're primarily focused on volumes, and like those underserved industries do incredible payment volume and they need this technology the most. For many of the other traditional industries that we typically think of, they don't need the support that Lightning can give them because they're all already well banked. So on that front, as far as other industries, Namecheap, for example, purchasing domains, so online native. We're also seeing people making hotel and flight reservations using Lightning, and that's a big piece. And that has actually helped grow the payments that Lightning is capable of serving.
Maybe one term or one thing that kind of resonates with a normal guy, you know, who's sort of critical of Bitcoin might be the stablecoin narrative, you know, and the stablecoin adoption. And they're saying, okay, this is fiat on the blockchain, you know, move fiat, I mean, I can do payment. And that's something I know, you know, and that's why, that's where I want to see the adoption. And even though we as Bitcoiner might be skeptical of fiat stuff, we see it happen as well. And that's why I think, yeah, we can't really turn a blind eye to it. So my question is, because we've been hearing this for quite some time, that even stable coins could move on to Bitcoin and then potentially be used through the Lightning Network. Yeah, can you take us through this? What have you been seeing there? And yeah, is any of that already coming to fruition?
You can't ignore the numbers. Stable coins did $20 trillion worth of payment volume last year. So Bitcoin should be serving those use cases. The biggest path forward that we have is using Taproot assets, which allows the payment volume to go through the Lightning Network, and only at the last hop does it switch into another currency, which would be a private channel just on the edge of the Lightning Network. And so a big focus for us has been helping to distribute Taproot assets to those that want them, so that we've got the broader Lightning Network can benefit from the payment activity of stablecoins without having to even touch a stablecoin. They can operate solely in Bitcoin. And then for nodes that are operating on the edges and interfacing between Bitcoin and these stablecoins, well, they become automated market makers and are able to receive one payment in Bitcoin, forward that payment as a different currency. And overall, that's a huge opportunity for them simply by interfacing and creating Lightning and changing it from simply a payment system into a decentralized exchange.
Can you maybe take a step back and can you take me through this sort of technical perspective, how it works with Taproot assets? Like, what is the stable? Is the stablecoin itself is a Taproot asset then? Or how does the stablecoin make it onto Bitcoin and then be used in the Lightning Network, like technically speaking?
Yeah, what Taproot assets enables is you to create a token on Bitcoin. And that token is compatible with what? With Lightning channels. So you can create a channel that's denominated in a separate token. Now, what backs the token? That's probably going to be a typical stablecoin type of setup. So you're going to back it with US treasuries. It's going to matter who is issuing this token. And it doesn't require a separate blockchain. You have what's called the UTXOs within UTXOs. So every time you spend Bitcoin, you may be spending an additional token as well that's embedded within that transaction.
Which kind of means then exactly that if we were to move this token around on Bitcoin, we would need Bitcoin to be moving this token around, which then ergo also means that if we see further down the road Bitcoin transactions happening, we can never really know, okay, is this just a mere Bitcoin transaction, or is like a Taproot asset attached with that SAT that is being sent around? And yeah, is that kind of like the mechanics of how that would work, right?
Exactly. So that means that all the activity from stablecoins would be happening within Bitcoin, which means the miners benefit from this. And it also means that we're only using one blockchain that everybody can access that has these stablecoins. You're not relying on another smaller blockchain or centralized blockchain to be able to manage the governance. We're leveraging Bitcoin's governance.
And why would you think that this has any chance of adoption? You know, just thinking out loud here and playing devil's advocate again, you know, like we already have these stable coins and they're in the billions, you know, they're happening, the volume and the market cap as well. And it's happening on more centralized networks like Ethereum or Tron. Even people switch, you know, like why would the issuer switch? Why would users switch to something like this on Bitcoin?
I think the real win comes with standardness. So simply by using a Lightning invoice, with Taproot assets, you'll be able to start a transaction as one currency and it will end as another currency. So whatever I want to send and whatever you want to receive, those are still using the exact same language. And with that standardness, we also have a scalability advantage because the Lightning Network can process 40 million transactions per second, where even a blockchain that's very centralized, like Solana, for example, can do 70,000 transactions per second. So we have more than 500x increase based on the next best blockchain in terms of scalability, which means that the transaction costs can be very low. And we have interoperability that's baked in. So even moving from Tether on one chain to Tether on another chain, that becomes extremely difficult because you're having to move between blockchains. But if we're all using the same blockchain and that's Bitcoin, it all works seamlessly together.
I see. Is that actually the case then that if you were to scale on Lightning, the transaction fees would not explode to the same extent as they would on other blockchains? Because you're right. Usually other blockchains like Tron, like Solana, they've been doing well when there was not that much sort of traction and not a lot of adoption happening. But then usually we could see it with the meme coin craze, you know, that happened on Solana or then maybe with Tron, you know, when there was actual adoption happening, their fees started spiking as well. Just with Bitcoin on the main chain, it happened also, you know. So wouldn't that be the same with Lightning, if we get a real adoption with Lightning, that there would also be higher fees that we would have to pay on the Lightning network itself?
We've been monitoring this. So even when Bitcoin's transaction fees have been rising, we haven't seen the same change happen in the Lightning network fees. People are a little bit slower to update their fees. I saw a pretty significant lag after the ordinals craze, but it also means that you're just moving transactions outside of the blockchain. So you're not having to compete for that block space all the time. You're able to continue to operate even if ordinals are going crazy. You can still transact and the money still works, which is a great point in Bitcoin and Lightning's favor. When it comes to Base, even the layer twos that are coming about from other blockchains, we watched Base hit 16 cents per transaction. And that's not something that works for the machine economy. If you want to do AI agents, overall, that's too expensive and too slow when you really do need the instant sub-cent transactions that are happening on Lightning today and will continue to be able to perform that even if you've got all this other activity happening on Bitcoin.
Okay, I'm just trying to infer. So that kind of means like if we had this very much like a lot of traction on Lightning, it wouldn't necessarily mean that transaction fees also would increase to the same extent. I mean, it would probably increase somewhat, I guess, you know, but we wouldn't have to fear that, like, theoretically speaking or hypothetically speaking, this gets out of hand as well, just because it's a different sort of type of system that we're dealing here with, right?
Yeah, there is a small change for capital efficiency purposes. You need more liquidity if you don't have a circular economy. But if you do have a circular economy, the transactions just flow back and forth throughout these payment channels. And if you are a Lightning router, that means you're collecting fees for kind of the activity just sloshing back and forth through your channels, which is a huge opportunity.
Yeah, because that's always one of the points that I was sort of critical, or that where I probably didn't understand it fully, where I was like, okay, you know, if you want to have this these people who manage the liquidity, you know, they want to earn something, you know, and then you have like this, okay, they want to put in liquidity, but then if the transaction fees they can earn don't grow enough for them to make it worth their while, then why would they deploy their liquidity in the first place? And then, yeah, it's kind of like this chicken egg thing, you know, like you at least get very low transaction fees, but then it's not worth it for the people to provide the capital in the first place. But then the other way around, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it too, but it sounds like you can with Lightning to some extent, right?
Yeah, because of the capital efficiency, really, it's a difficult problem to figure out exactly where to deploy capital. But that for Amboss is where we've been putting a lot of our effort on training machine learning models, on figuring out where to allocate capital so you're serving the network. And that means more competition for routing fees, which also pushes the price of Lightning transactions down because you've got open market competition for routing your transaction through Lightning. And so, yeah, we've got a multi-armed bandit right now. That's one of the machine learning algorithms that we're using that is kind of focusing on exploring new parts of the network and serving those use cases and solving the liquidity problems there.
Very interesting. Nice. Coming back to Tether, you know, Yeah, I've been talking about issuing a stablecoin on Bitcoin for quite some time, using, I think, the Taproot asset scheme, you know. But then why hasn't it happened yet? You know, what are we waiting for? Is it a technical sort of obstacle that's still there? Or, yeah, what is it that keeps Tether from actually issuing and bringing this thing live?
So at this point, we haven't yet seen native issuance. But first, what's going to happen is wrapped stablecoins. So we'll take a stablecoin that already exists, that's already Genius Act compatible, and we'll issue a Taproot asset against it. And we saw that happen with Speed Wallet already, where they've created a Taproot asset that is USDTL, and that is backed by USDT on Ethereum. In Speed's implementation, it's only within their wallet, within their own ecosystem, and it's kind of closed off. So where we're going next is bringing that Taproot asset and making it accessible for more people. So we'll be moving these stablecoins, even as wrapped forms, or we'll let the market decide. We'll bring those to our Magma marketplace so people can acquire liquidity in these other currencies. And Lightning is already capable of interfacing between them. So you could have that transaction that starts as one currency and ends as another.
Okay, I see. I know, maybe I have to push again, but I know you're not working for Tether, but, so you can't speak on their behalf. But like, what is holding them back, you know, to do this native issuance that you were speaking of? Couldn't they just say, okay, now we issue on Bitcoin? Because at least I know they are Bitcoiners. I had Paolo on the show already in the past as well, and he's a Bitcoiner through and through. And so, yeah, what is holding them back to bring this native stablecoin as a Taproot asset on Bitcoin? Any ideas?
I think Tether overall is just focused on whatever they want to focus on. They're at a stage of their company where they can really be dreamers and just kind of focus on whatever they want to focus on, whether that's Pair or Keet or any of the different initiatives that Tether is taking on, including energy. So it really is a matter of prioritization for them. And we do have builders that are mapping that technology. So when you've got folks like Speed that are bringing Tether into new ecosystems, into the Lightning Network, Tether will be able to kind of watch that data and see whether to double down and issue native Tether or transition existing Tether into native Tether.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, because as an outsider, I just have the feeling it kind of hinges on Tether doing the first step. Probably it won't. It will take longer, you know, for other things to kind of come along. But I mean, it would be such a boost and then also a signal, you know, if Tether were to kind of finally bring that Taproot asset and then move USDT natively onto Bitcoin. But let's see. Let's hope that they shift their priorities and at some point they'll bring it. Can you maybe explain now Rails X? You know, this is the product that I think you've been pioneering and it just recently launched in its current form, I guess. Can you explain what this is and how it helps the world?
Sure. Rails X is peer-to-peer trading that's happening natively on the Lightning Network. So that means that anyone with a Lightning node can add the Taproot asset functions to it and be able to trade natively on Lightning between any of these stablecoins and Bitcoin. And the way to do it is purchasing a channel in each of those currencies, getting set up with that, and then you can do a circular Lightning payment that you spend Bitcoin and receive USDT, or spend USDT and receive Bitcoin. But that's just happening peer-to-peer, which means that you don't have to create an account at an exchange. You don't have to go through the KYC process. You can maintain self-custody at all times. And I think that's extremely powerful because, you know, we're living in a time where we shouldn't have to give up all that information simply to trade with our peers and be able to select our own currencies. But what it means is that we have a foreign exchange system that's happening natively on Bitcoin. And that is a $9.5 trillion per day market, simply moving between currencies. But RailsX solves a problem, which is accumulations and shortages of stablecoins within the Lightning Network. And so not only are they able to do more trades, but they're also solving an accumulation problem and able to execute arbitrage within Lightning.
And as I understand it, RailsX really combines the Lightning Network as well as the Taproot Asset Framework. That's really like the two moving pieces that come together here and make this possible further down the line, or it's already possible. I mean, does this also mean that DEXs, you know, that we know from the traditional DeFi space, or for example, like Hyperliquid, you know, who's been quite at the talk of the town as of late, you know, because of their sort of perpetual DEX that they provided, where people are just looking for exposure to an asset, not so much like the ownership of it, really, or then like Polymarket as a prediction market. Could all of this now be built using these frameworks on top of Bitcoin? And do you think this will actually be the case?
One, we're making it the case. So it's possible to build all of the functions of Hyperliquid, of, you know, Polymarket without introducing a new token. We can just use Bitcoin as the base token. In order to make the DEX work, we don't have to create a new token that is Hyperliquid and play with all of the token incentives. Overall, we just use Bitcoin and we have this foundational currency that makes the whole thing work.
And I guess from what I understand now, if these solutions are live, even though there's no token, which is almost the case with every other project as well, you know, they can't really use the token in an equity sense because of regulation. That's why they're doing buybacks and stuff like this. But then with Bitcoin, with these new protocols on Bitcoin, there would be no standalone token, but still, I mean, people, the users could be earning yield, you know, providing, like, as you said, doing the liquidity management, providing the necessary channel management and stuff like this. And so, yeah, there it opens up a new yield opportunity on Bitcoin itself, which is like huge, you know, because like all the arguments that people have been making for years, Bitcoin is like gold. It doesn't pay a yield. If like what you're telling me is coming to fruition and people are using these type of things on top of Bitcoin, all of a sudden you can actually earn a native yield with Bitcoin, which makes all these arguments of all these like TradFi guys obsolete, wouldn't it?
That's exactly right. The reason that we created our Magma Marketplace is because we as a team read Nick Bhatia's paper on the time value of Bitcoin, which was all about the native yield that's possible with Bitcoin without sacrificing self-custody. So we built this so you could lease liquidity and tap into payment routing. And we've packaged that up now as a separate product just called Rails, the Rails liquidity provider. And the user for that is completely passive. So this is very attractive to all the Bitcoin treasury companies and the digital asset treasuries because they don't have to sacrifice self-custody, or they may be able to use their existing custodian and now tap into these native yield opportunities without introducing more risk, without introducing borrowing and lending. And that means that it's going to, you know, be lower on the risk and return spectrum. However, it is tapping into some small yield opportunities. But we have seen a surprise because of the iGaming demands and the payment volumes is that we hit 1.5% APY recently from our Rails liquidity provider product. That was the average. So we're very excited to see those numbers and continue that going as we move into a multi-asset space and we're moving between currencies.
Yeah, yeah. And this also puts Bitcoin on a whole new level or on a whole another level when you compare it to gold, you know, or vis-a-vis gold, because then Bitcoin is not only digital gold, but it's the one actually paying a native yield, which would change the picture completely for me, at least. You know, I mean, I can already imagine today a lot of products that are amassing a lot of Bitcoin, like you mentioned, the Bitcoin treasury companies like Strategy first and foremost. You have the ETFs, you know, that are now gobbling up all these Bitcoin, and they, all of them nowadays, they're just sitting around idly. I mean, from what you're telling me, we could actually be creating a Bitcoin ETF powered by Lightning, which is paying a yield, you know, and stuff like this. And it's just fascinating what we can kind of think about here. Any sorts of steps are taken in that direction?
I think at this point, since we launched Rails, and that was, you know, back in June of last year, we're coming up on a year of deploying this. I think it has taken a while because we've learned that Bitcoin treasury companies, many of them have to use a custodian. So that requires that they do all of those checks. But I can assure you that they're moving in that direction because Rails has been extremely attractive to them because it is extremely low risk. And that's been the major appeal while tapping into some native yield opportunities. It also aligns incentives to say that not only is Bitcoin a store of value, but it's also a medium of exchange. And creating infrastructure with your Bitcoin is very attractive for supporting the overall Bitcoin ecosystem.
Yeah, so fascinating. I'm really stoked to see what's happening on that front. Maybe one last topic I want to turn to is the AI agent topic, you know, because that's also something everybody has been talking about as of late. Now, to me as a layman, again, it feels like the Lightning Network is perfectly positioned, you know, to kind of tap into this growing network of AI agents, you know, because especially for channel and liquidity management, it's kind of like a hassle, stuff like you are doing. But I could even imagine that people who maybe are not as savvy, they just get like a manual and then feed it into their AI agent and have them do the channel liquidity on their behalf. And that would even be kind of a competition for you guys. But like, yeah, like what are you seeing there? You know, could that be the case? And My last question would be, would that even make it possible? Because a lot of people have been saying, you know, people will never run their own node and Lightning node because like it's just too complicated. But yeah, maybe it's not the people themselves, but their agents who will. And then still everybody is connected to their own node, which would help Bitcoin tremendously. So yeah, any thoughts on that?
We're seeing AI agents purchase liquidity now. So recently, Albi has made some strides to have a very low-cost node that's easy to manage for an AI agent. So they've built the MCPs and the skills for managing a Lightning node. And it pulls from our marketplace of liquidity. So we've got our liquidity providers that are now serving AI agents. But really, Lightning is the best technology for AI agents because it does micropayments so well. Having a subsent transaction with instant finality is one of those key pieces that the AI agent or the agentic economy really needs to get going. And that solves many of the cash flow issues that the AI companies are going to run into. So things like Anthropic, where they're burning through cash and requiring these massive venture capital rounds, overall, that would be solved if they were simply on a pay-per-use basis and they weren't burning capital to payment processing fees and taking on chargeback risk. So we've seen a couple of standards emerge from X402, L402, the machine payments protocol, and Lightning maps very neatly into any of those payment standards, which allows sessions and very high efficiency ways to transact between AI agents.
Yeah, it sounds so interesting. But like one caveat that I want to put out there is, do you think the AI people will recognize this and actually come around to using Lightning? Because I feel like, you know, they are so hung up in their own sort of industry, have their problems, and then, you know, they look to kind of the centralized world again for solutions. It's kind of like the thing. I feel like Matt Corallo has also this piece that he was writing where he was, okay, you know, Bitcoin is open source money, perfectly made for these open source AI agents, but maybe most of the agents won't be open source. And that's why, you know, there's not match made in heaven. And yeah, what do you think? Like, how do we get the AI people to kind of recognize Bitcoin and the opportunities that you kind of present with Lightning and everything?
What's to our benefit is that the AI agents are logical. And Bitcoin wins purely on a logical standpoint. So if you want a lower risk system, if you want a lower cost system, if you want to improve revenues and reduce costs, well, you'll end up at Lightning. If you want to switch currencies, having a multi-currency Lightning is one of those requirements. That means that you can have lower cost payments. Overall, it kind of just means that the AI agents, if they're following the incentives, will arrive at Lightning. So I don't need to convince very many people. I just need to be logical and more efficient than any of the other alternatives. And that's where we're at.
Nice. So let's just let logic do its thing. That's kind of like what we're after here. So yeah, amazing. Jesse, I think that was very, very enlightening for me. Very great points in there that I can also ruminate on. I guess the audience as well has some stuff to chew on. So thanks a lot. Any last words, anything that we forgot? And if not, like, where can people follow you? Where can they check out RailsX or like Amboss?
If you want to dive into Lightning, we can help out in a lot of ways. So feel free to go to our website at amboss.tech. That's AMBOSS.TECH. But overall, we can help with setting up payment systems, managing liquidity, answering some of the compliance questions that naturally come up when you're dealing with private payments, and overall get you set up to win, start tapping into yields, start tapping into decentralized exchange natively on Bitcoin through the Lightning Network.
Great. Yeah. And where can people follow you and maybe reach out to if they want to talk to you personally? Is X still the best place for you as well?
X is great. I'm also on Noster, but Jestifer_BTC is my handle. So feel free to follow me.
Great. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Jesse. That was amazing. Hope to get you back on the show. And until then, have a great one.
Thanks so much, Pascal.
Thank you. Bye.